A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome back to what is series 11 of Food for Thought. I can't thank you enough for your support over the years, and I'm just so happy to be back with another jam-packed series. This latest series examines so many fascinating topics which I just know that you'll all love. I am Rhiannon Lambert, for those of you that don't know, a registered nutritionist, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. So over the next 12 weeks, my expert guests and I's aim is to expose why so much advice can often be misleading and harness you with the truth. We'll be using proven science to sort fact from fiction and dispel everything that remains confusing in the world of wellness. We live in a society that never literally stops, with endless opportunities and constant expectations. The divide between work and free time has rapidly become off-kilter, affecting a multitude of factors, including our physical and mental health. This week's Food for Thought sees Grace Beverly and I discuss the ultimate work-life balance. Hello, Grace.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, Grace, I think it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. I've followed your journey for a very long time, and it's been quite a remarkable one. I think we should kick off right away and go straight in there with the question I think everyone's going to want to know. And that is the fact that, is it really possible, Grace, to get that balance right? I mean, between work and play, because everyone says, you know, you have to work really hard, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the question is less about getting a balance right and more about understanding that there's going to be a different balance at every point. It's never 50-50. It's never going to be, you know, a static balance. There's going to be some give and take dependent on where you are in your life, whether you're working on a really hard project, whether you're applying for a new job. And for me, it's about really understanding exactly what my balance looks like at any one time, and then being able to navigate that rather than expecting it to look exactly like one certain way all the time.
Because I guess from reading your book, which is amazing, by the way, it's so interesting because
Thank you. You
draw in from so many sources. You've got mentions of, you know, classic psychological studies. I was reading about Maslow in there, and then you were quoting other authors. And it's quite interesting to see as well that if we can do that and we can get the balance right, that our productivity, I guess, can soar, and perhaps we have more space in our brain to generate these new waves of inspiration.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the key is that actually everyone's productivity will be different. Everyone's idea of what productivity is will be completely different. And actually understanding what that is for ourselves, I think, is the most important thing. And what I really wanted to do for the book was kind of avoid any blanket applications or avoid any classic kind of very marketable how to be Grace, quote unquote, type things. And instead just be like, I guess this is what I can help you to ask to make your working life better. This isn't about me. This is about how you can do that and the questions you need to start asking to actually examine what your relationship with work is, whether you tie your self-worth to your kind of productivity, and all of these bigger questions, which I think really need to start being asked more.
They really do, because you mentioned self-worth there, and I think self-efficacy is another one. And there's so many points to our mindset and the way that we view the world and see the world that I think has an impact on how we choose to act. And you did mention as well that you didn't want the book to be, I guess, just targeting women. And because I think a lot of people in the media, they see a successful woman, don't they? And straight away it's, oh, a woman can do it, can't they? That's the kind of attitude. Well, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm in two minds, because I think there's a real problem with kind of girl boss feminism and with the kind of girl boss rhetoric, and it pisses me off, to be perfectly honest, every time anyone's like, she's a, you know, like, I get it, and I think it's really important to celebrate and to promote and to acknowledge female entrepreneurship and female success and all of that. However, what I do think is important is not, I guess it's not a qualifying factor of what I am, and therefore it's, I think, also important to be able to apply that on a wider scale and not necessarily narrow it down and pigeonhole all successful women or all women in general as, you know, kind of outliers or I guess exceptions to the rule. I think that can be more harmful than it can be good. And don't get me wrong, one of my, you know, real driving factors is I really love helping women and helping women build their businesses. I do a lot of kind of mentorship around that, and that's really important to me. And I really gravitate towards that. However, I also, I guess I know too that, you know, any woman who's doing something will also, it shouldn't then just be marketed towards women, and it isn't just then applicable towards women. And I think that can be really harmful when, you know, a lot of the time when I was talking about the book and all of that, instantly people assumed, they were like, oh, it's going to be a women's working handbook or a woman's handbook to productivity. And I was like, where have you got the idea of women's from? You've only got that because I'm a woman. So does that mean I can only speak to women about this? Because I know that in my own right, I've been successful, I guess, not just as a woman, not that that's kind of a bad thing at all. I just think it's problematic when you start to assume based on that, that it must be for women because it's by women.
It's so complex. I mean, even when you just spoke about it, my mind is going into overdrive with so many different areas that we could go down just from that one line that you said, you know, just because it's a book written by a woman. And I did actually see something on the news the other day that said that COVID, the result of the impact of the pandemic, has set women back, though, in sense of where they were getting in society with being equal. And I guess that's a whole other topic, but the language that we use around things, if we apply this back to our work rather than gender, and the approach we have towards our work, it can have such a fundamental impact, can't it, on the results? I guess that's psychological as well as how others will then look at it.
Oh, 100%. And I think that, you know, the wider conversation, I guess, you know, I addressed that in the introduction, but I kind of move on from it quite quickly because I think, like, you know, it's more of like a let's get this straight. This isn't for this, and please don't assume it is. And I guess if you're not into having this conversation because it's written by a woman and you're not a woman, then you're missing out on an important conversation. That's not for me to deal with. That's not, you know, it's not my business. And I think, you know, you're completely right in the way that actually what we need to be talking about is these things that actually affect everyone on a wider scale and everyone differently. And that's really what I wanted to address.
Yeah, and I love that. And I guess so what I find quite fascinating and something you also mentioned is that you are aware of the privilege and the background you've had, in the sense, I think you said, you know, you've been to private school, but you also have an eclectic taste of extracurriculars in a way. I mean, you studied music, which, girl after my own heart, I'm a huge music advocate. You know, I'm a singer originally, and I do find that you've gone down such an opposite route to your degree in a way. You do what you love. Is it because your love changed from music that you then decided to follow a career in doing what you love? And do you think that's part of the success?
Do you know what? I think actually the idea of, you know, I studied music and my background very much was in music. I studied at the Royal Academy before I went to Oxford and was really, you know, it was always what I did. It was how I went to the schools I went to with the scholarships. And it was always a huge part of my life. I knew it wasn't going to be my career, I guess. I think in a way it was because my idea of success wasn't related to that. It was very much related to your classic traditional corporate shiny boardrooms and all of that. And that was kind of how I saw success on a wider level. And therefore, for me, as someone who wanted to be a really high achiever, I think I just had this completely warped view that that couldn't include, which is insane because also my mum is in the arts and kind of has always loved that and has worked really hard to be doing that. And yet, I guess my view of success was kind of that I'd done that music and that was very much like a benchmark that I saw about, you know, hard work and how hard work always beats talent and everything. And that taught me a lot, but I always knew that it wasn't going to be my career. And actually, I think now that was kind of sad in a way, and that was almost completely shaped by the idea of what I saw as very traditional success as a product of, I guess, my environment. And actually, when I look back now, I think, like, God, I would have loved to work in music. I would have loved to be a music producer. I would have loved to even be in music management or to work at a big music production company or something like that. But that actually was never in my mind because I didn't see it as kind of shiny capital S success, which is completely incorrect.
I think the part that's so interesting in that is that it's how you define success and how you viewed it, which also shaped what you aspired to. And, you know, I guess some people see success as just being happy. Others see it, like you said, the shiny boardroom, and someone else may see it because of how their parents have imposed it on them growing up. And I guess if someone suddenly realised, hang on a minute, I'm not happy in what I'm doing right now, what advice would you give to them to, I guess, switch careers and make that change? Because you definitely have done that. You've got a multitude of different areas, haven't you? Fingers in different pies, as we like to say.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I want to draw attention to there as well is I had the freedom to do that because I was at kind of what I considered a 3-year limbo by being at university, where I didn't need to take a leap of faith. I didn't need to quit my job to do something else. I didn't need to, I guess, change everything to pursue one big passion. And actually, I don't think I had or have one big passion at all, or kind of purpose even. And I think actually the important thing to do in that type of situation is to work out how you can get more and more of that into your daily life. And it might, you know, it might be something that it means that you'd need to actually, you know, you do need to quit your job, or that would have real results for you. But often as well, I think there's a high glamorization around the idea of just like quitting your job and changing your life and going and being able to do something hyper fulfilling and hyper lucrative. And actually, oftentimes, like your work, first of all, your work is needed to kind of pay your bills and to be able to, and that comes with a certain happiness and security as well. So often what can be even more beneficial is, I guess, implementing little bits of what you love into your daily life, whether that's your work or whether you just work until 5 to pay the bills and then go and do other things you love, and being able to kind of litter that throughout and not just viewing it as the idea that actually if you're not fulfilling your purpose at the age of 24, then you need to quit your job and change your career and all of that, because I think that's a concept that's been very warped and sold to us through this idea that you should be fulfilling your purpose on the first stage of the career ladder rather than something that kind of is amazing, but probably only after X amount of years and after X amount of trials and errors and all of that.
Yeah, it's almost as if we do put maybe it's societal norms, benchmarks. Like, I know a lot of people have the number 30 in their head. By the time I'm 30, I want to have achieved X, Y, and Z. And then I think perhaps social media, I wonder what your views on this have glamorized or incentivize people to think, oh, I'm just going to do this, and they don't see the graph that's gone into it. So there's this kind of perception, isn't there, of an overnight success, and the reality is different, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think it's really, really important to draw attention to, because, you know, I wanted to write this book, and I guess I had interest to write a book about the idea of productivity and managing your time and success and all of these things, but bearing in mind the fact that I'm 24, I've done this, that and the other, but also I can only know what I know, and I don't want to pretend that I know any more than that. And actually the important thing for me here was kind of drawing attention as well to the idea that when people see my success, there's a whole load of context you might not see. When you see me posting at 10 p.m. still working, like, I'll probably still get 8 hours of sleep that night because that's really important to me. And I really wanted to, I guess, create a more realistic representation of what hard work looks like, also incorporating the ideas of rest and the ideas of enjoyment and the ideas that it's not you know, if you do love what you do, and I do, it's not going to be great all the time. And I know that's not kind of, it's not wholly groundbreaking, but actually, it was so important to me as someone who probably is a symbol of, I guess, hustle culture for a lot of people, to acknowledge the realistic, kind of the realistic side of that and what that actually looks like. Because otherwise, you know, if I guess my view of hustle culture and the representation of what the hustle looks like on social media was so warped for me, then the best thing I can do is not warp that for other people.
I mean, there's definite generation shifts, I think, in the way people view that. I think you do it really well. You are realistic and honest about it, because there will be people listening to this that think, well, you know, I'm a young single parent, or I don't have X, Y, and Z, and stress and anxiety right now are getting the better of me. So the concept of working less must seem completely alien. What would you say to those types of individuals that are thinking, well, how on earth do I work less but still get what I need from it? It's a big question, sorry.
No, that's fine. What I really wanted to make clear in the book as well is that it's not, I guess the most frustrating thing would be if you're looking at someone who's 24 saying, like, you need to step back and rest more so that you can go further, and you've got three children and you're trying to balance a job and a job that has no flexibility and you have to commute 2 hours and get the kids from school and all of that. And that's just, that's not helpful. It's not helpful as a blanket application. And that's why it was so important for me in the book to actually, I guess, you know, I can only do things from my experience, but what I can do is I can also offer up the questions and offer up the, I guess, changes in that to be able to see how this can work for you as an individual, rather than how I'm telling you, me with all the mobility in the world, how I'm telling you, you can kind of work better. But I think what is important, you know, is that view of rest and the, I guess, the change in the idea that rest is not something you earn because you're close to burnout, but it's something that is a essential and constant part of your life, daily, even hourly, certainly weekly and kind of beyond. And I guess, you know, there are times where I think, oh yeah, I need to step back because I'm really burnt out here. I really can't do anymore. And I can't, you know, there's a crisis that calls people's livelihoods rely on me. I have employees, I have, you know, customers, I have all of these things. And so, you know, there can be a recognition that actually rest is important, and also you still not being able to do it. And I think I wanted to make that clear so that we have this, I guess, a removal of this this internalization that you have to be working all the time in order for it to be hard work, but also an acknowledgement that that doesn't mean that you can kind of be like, oh, sorry, boss, I have to rest now because I think my work's going to be better, so I'm not going to work for the rest of the week. That's also not realistic. So I guess it's a change in our perceptions and our internalizations and what we hold as true in a kind of blanket sense, and instead an analysis on a wider level and an acknowledgement that actually where we can, rest can really help, and rest should not be a reward. It should be it's a necessity. You can't have productivity without rest.
Yeah, 100%. And do you think external factors matter too? For instance, who you surround yourself with? Because I guess anecdotally, I can speak on the level that I've been in an environment for a very long time that kind of just taught me to say, well, you're in charge of X, Y, Z. You have no choice but to work all hours under the sun, because if you don't do it, no one's going to do it for you. I guess if you had people need to surround themselves with people that support you and enable you to take that time.
Yeah, I think there's in part that, but I think also that's particularly difficult when, you know, when you're on a grad scheme and trying to make it to the end of the grad scheme and then get a permanent job, or you're kind of brand new in your retail job, and actually there's no way that you can say, like, I need to take a rest because you know you need to do your shift, and if you don't, or you're in a 0 hours contract, and if you don't start taking your shifts then you don't get shifts. And so there's kind of like, I guess that in an ideal world, yes, there would be that recognition, but actually that's largely not going to be the case, especially with the change in work culture and the idea that, you know, side hustles are everything, and every minute that you're not working on one thing, you should be working on something else. But I think it's kind of our duty as you kind of say, in an ideal world, that would be great. But more than that, it's important, because that's not entirely realistic, it's important to have our own views on that we can kind of hold true and know where our boundaries are when it comes to work.
Yeah, the boundaries, that's so important, because I think our interests, they're now elevated, aren't they, to business opportunities. So I guess, where do you draw the line? Like, how do you even get to that point where you think, hang on, this is a bit much right now?
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Oh, well, I think the important thing there is actually learning to draw the line before you get there. And I know, you know, there's kind of prevention and cure, and there's proactivity and reactivity. And I think what's really important with the idea of productivity and rest is that you start to have a better view of what that means to you from the off. So it's not always reactive when you're instating rest. It's not always reactive when you're putting down your work and saying, actually, I need to go on a walk instead. You need to be able to, I guess otherwise you kind of are fighting a losing battle. It's better than nothing because you still have that recognition there. But actually, you know, I know in advance that I need to take weekends, most weekends, unless I have a crisis and just can't. But, you know, that's in a needs must scenario. I also know that if I do something more than 2 weeknights a week, I will be dead and my work won't be good and I won't feel rested and I won't stick to my routine, which brings me a lot of joy and fulfillment and makes me feel like I have my life together and kind of other things like that. And that's through. And so I think that's what's very important in the prevention is actually understanding your own work habits, your own work boundaries, your own ideas of where things get too much, whether it's kind of emotional stress or work stress, or, you know, there are so many different types of, I guess, labor on ourselves. And so kind of understanding that before you get to a point where you have to be reactive about it is best. And then, you know, but then there'll still be times where you get it wrong. There'll still be times where you think, oh God, I've stuck to all my rules this week, and yet I still feel like death and I still feel like I can't push forward. And that's when you just say, okay, cool, that's fine. But being proactive will be, and preventative will be far more effective, I guess, in the long run in actually creating that idea of, you know, hashtag balance.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of self-exploration there, learning a lot about what makes you tick, what you need to thrive. And I love that you mentioned routine, because I think as human beings, sometimes we try and fight it. But actually, and I only know from having a child that they love routine. And it's so interesting to see what we lose as we grow older in terms of not listening to our innate emotions and our innate responses, things that we want to do. We tend to kind of switch off and just listen to societal expectations. So we do need to prioritize ourselves, don't we?
Yeah, and I think what's also, I think one of the important things now as well is to acknowledge the fact that that's not necessarily just because we're all, like, all, everyone in these younger generations have suddenly been born super impressionable or super kind of entitled or kind of not able to work. Actually, it's more just that if all of these ideas around comparison, productivity, self-worth, success, the list goes on, are so constantly and ubiquitously surrounding us from literally like a little screen in our hands, then it's not surprising. It's not that we're suddenly all narcissistic and need to be comparing ourselves to everyone and this, that and the other. It's a product of the environment that we now exist within. And therefore, you know, and that has had kind of huge changes on our generation and how we work and how we do things. And we can't just look at that and just be like, oh, well, this generation's like this, so that's why they don't work hard, because there's never going to be a whole generation of people that are the exact same. So I think that's really important to look at too. And that's why in the book I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just saying like, ooh, use social media less. Because like, yes, for a lot of people that will be good. But also if you need to be on LinkedIn to get a job and you need to be, your business needs to be on Instagram in order to get clients or to get orders or anything, then it's just, that's not productive. That's not constructive. That's obstructive. Mm. And so like, how can we use it better to further ourselves or to kind of examine our relationships? I think that's the important thing to ask.
I mean, the online world's a funny one, isn't it? I think because it's still, I mean, in terms of the field of science, it's relatively new with how it impacts our mental health or our productivity. But there's no questioning the fact that it has opened endless opportunities. It is free marketing. If you use it well, it's enabled people that never before, you know, would have had a chance or are looking at achieving something. And they've been given this incredible opportunity to have this online voice and to reach many people. It's important that we do talk about that. And also the expectations of different generations. You can't blanket and just say that one size fits all. The same goes with, oh, the millennials or Generation Z or the older generation that we have right now, the war. You know, there's all sorts of comparisons. And I do think that comparison really doesn't help. And the definition of success, as you discuss, is the fact that we need to examine all of this, what it means to us professionally and personally, and then how we're going to achieve it. But I'm going to move on to questions from our listeners. Leah has said, how did you know when the right time was to start the business?
Oh, okay. I think that there's the main answer to this is that there's never a right time. And that, I guess, overall, if your first product is, if you don't look back and your first product isn't something that you're kind of not quite embarrassed by, but you know, isn't the perfect product, isn't something you'd want to be producing now, then you started too late. So like, you're never going to get it just right. Often you're not going to be able to afford to create the perfect product before you can release it. So there's the idea of this thing called a minimum viable product, which is talked about a lot about in the Lean Startup by Eric Rice. Something like that. Anyway, it's, you know, and I think that the important thing is understanding that, because otherwise, you know, it's really easy to be very perfectionist when it comes to something like starting a business. And it's important to have high standards, don't get me wrong. So I'd say the most important thing is really honing your concept. You know, what are you offering? What are you not offering? What are you offering that's different from other people? Are you solving a problem that's existing in the industry, or are you changing people's entire perceptions of a product they already use or a brand new product? And really understanding exactly what your concept is. And I think as soon as you've got that, you're pretty close to being able to go. It completely depends on your situation, on whether you have an investment backing it or your own investment backing it, or you're doing it as a side hustle alongside a job. But I'd say the general rule is the sooner the better, because you'll often learn something from your customers within the first few weeks that you'd actually never have thought of, no matter how long you spend on the product. So for example, the first business I started, I'd probably been working on it a few weeks before I launched it. And that was because it was a digital product. So it wasn't much at all. I needed some money, being perfectly honest. And I put it together and I marketed it and sold it. My second business, however, was a lot more conceptual. It was a lot more of a problem or of a solution to a problem. And so I spent a year on it before I even launched it. And that was also because I had the financial backing at that point to be able to do that. And it was really important to me to get that concept exactly right. So I guess a long-winded way of saying that there is never a specific time for a business that makes it ready, but there is always going to be more to do. So I'd say sooner rather than later, and listen to people's criticism too. When you tell someone at a dinner that, you know, this is what you're doing, and they say like, doesn't this company do this? Or, oh, I've actually already had this from this place. Listen to that, hone your concept, make it better. Because if those people are asking that, then that your customers will be asking the exact same thing.
Wonderful advice, definitely. And that kind of leads on to the question we've got from Kim, who said she procrastinates too much. And I love that you just said, just do it, because the question is, how can I just get on with it?
Yeah, I think the important thing with that, I actually did a podcast recently with Dr. Grace Lorden, who's actually does a lot of kind of work around around kind of like popular psychology and how that affects our work. And she's got a fantastic book as well. And she talks a lot about procrastination and what that actually is. So I'd recommend her as a kind of real, a real kind of powerhouse on this topic. But I'd say for me, what's really helped is just being, understanding how I procrastinate and why I procrastinate, and then being able to fight those things. So I procrastinate, for example, by doing admin. So I do easier work that's not going to really mean I engage my brain, but I still feel like I'm working. So I don't really have the kick up the bum to actually want to do more. And so what I've really realized is that that is procrastination. That's not me actually doing effective work. And one of the most effective ways of kind of combating that for me was just planning what I was going to do, when, how long that took me, and understanding that actually, you know, my most important thing is that I do my worst task first. That's the idea of this thing called like Eat the Frog, I believe. And people,
I haven't heard that. Eat
have
the
you
Frog.
Not?
No.
Google Eat the Frog, and okay, it's quite funny. I remember reading about it and I was like, I feel like I'm missing something here because this sounds strange. But yeah, it's the idea of doing your worst task first, always. And that's something that's really helped me. But everyone procrastinates so differently. And that's what I really learned from Dr. Lorden as well. And so it's really hard to kind of say like, don't procrastinate with this, don't procrastinate with this. Learn your procrastination and learn what you do that is your procrastination, and then you can combat it.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I've just Googled it. Yeah, looks a lot of stuff, even books coming up called Eat the Frog. Right. So yeah, books, there's lots of them apparently on Google. Phoebe has said, I'm shortly starting my first job. In terms of expectations and reality, how will these match up?
Oh, well,
how do we know what job is starting as well? And then, yeah.
No, I think that often... allow yourself to kind of get lost in the expectation. Like, I think that's, it's not necessarily something that's bad. I think that, you know, I loved dreaming of kind of like the glossiness of like the boardroom and these meetings and these important things and feeling kind of like I was on top of the world in a high-rise building, like in the city. And like, allow yourself to get lost in it. You can romanticize it. You can like enjoy that. I think the important thing though is to also be open-minded about what that will actually look like, because, you know, the majority of workplaces, including mine sometimes, are just, you know, they're just boring, they're operational, they're business as usual. So the important thing is just allowing yourself to keep that open mind, and go into it with that open mind so that you can understand, you know, how best to do your job, how your manager likes your job being done, how you could potentially improve that and make it more streamlined and make it more exciting for you and therefore the work's better. So just keep that open mind, but also it's not necessarily bad that expectation doesn't equal reality. It's just something we need to be mindful of, and allow yourself to enjoy that, because, you know, starting a new job and things like that and trying new things is actually really, it's very exciting, and it's not something we do often, so enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, Phoebe, the fact you even asked that question means you're aware that reality is different to expectations, which is a great starting point anyway. And then we've got the last question, which I think is very useful after picking those, I think from Amy. And she said, what are your top tips for standing out in a crowded marketplace?
Oh, I like this one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
So once again, completely depends on what you do. It depends whether you're a self-employed artist or a new brand or someone who's working in a corporate job who wants to stand out among other interns or something. And I think, you know, I have a whole chapter in the book about this idea of kind of creative uniqueness and the idea that actually bringing your creativity and your uniqueness to everything, or to anything you do is kind of the benefit. It's a win-win. So on the one hand, you enjoy it more, and then on the other hand, you know, it makes your work more valuable, and it makes your work more one of a kind, and it makes you irreplaceable. And so I think, you know, that's something that I really read into, and that I read into it so much because actually I can see the results it's had for also my team members. You know, I work with people who used to do completely different jobs, and I was just like, you're great, will you come and do this for me? And they've kind of been able to shape their careers exactly based off what they're good at, and doing that in a kind of creative way that was completely unique to themselves. And so I think, you know, where you can, embrace those differences, embrace what you do well that's slightly different from other people, and see how you can thread that through your work more. Talk to your manager if you think that something could be done quicker and more streamlined. And, you know, that's what I spent a lot of my time doing at IBM, because when I got there, I was just, you know, it was largely a reporting job. And I thought, well, this takes hours. It could take this much quicker if we just did this different thing. And to me, that was not only important for making my job more enjoyable, but actually, I guess, made it probably better, I'd hope, for the people I was reporting to, because things are done quicker or their interns happier and kind of all of these things. So I guess it completely depends, and I can't give as specific advice because I don't know what perspective it's coming from. But I guess the main thing is really embracing your creativity and embracing your uniqueness, and just be open-minded about things. Different managers will react in different ways, especially people who have been there longer or perhaps less experienced managers will be less open to change. And so kind of know your audience and approach it bearing on, like completely depending on who it is. But I think that the important thing there is, yeah, really embracing that, you know, your creativity and what makes you unique and bringing that to your work.
Oh, lovely. And I can hear the passion when you were speaking about that. It's wonderful. Thank you for your tips there. Now we have our fact or fiction round, which I think you're going to love. Are you ready?
Is it a test?
Well, no.
Because I prefer to revise beforehand.
I know. I knew you'd say something like that. No, so you just need to answer fact or fiction, whatever you feel like, to the following questions, Grace. Okay? Are you ready?
Okay. Go.
Okay. Burnout is inevitable unless you find a happy work-life balance.
Fact.
Even the shortest of walks helps productivity.
Fact.
Working from home is more productive than in an office.
I think it's complicated. I think it depends on the person.
We'll say faction. breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
Fiction. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
Breakfast.
But everyone's unique, and as we know, no one size fits all. Removing notifications will make you work smarter.
Fact.
Creating a to-do list that's unrealistic does more harm than good.
Fact.
Working with friends is not conducive to hard work. I should have said conducive. Not conducive to hard work.
Don't worry, I literally had to look up a word every few seconds when I was writing the book. No, I think that's fiction.
Yeah, I like to agree with that one. Sleep is one of the biggest influences to changing and achieving your goals.
Fact.
Nature supports mental health.
Fact.
And anyone can build a brand.
Fact.
Yeah, that was it. That's the fact or fiction round.
Oh, did I pass? What was my grade?
See, this is the thing. And you know, it's even worse when we do it with scientists and there's no black or white. You can imagine how hard it is saying, because everything's got nuance, hasn't it? Right, so that does nearly wrap up the episode. But we always finish, Grace, with a food for thought. And I guess I'll start today by just saying that from speaking with you on this episode today, I think everybody has different pressures internally that they put on themselves and also externally, I guess. And delegation is also really important. And it's something that I know you speak about a lot. It's really important that we do that. And I think we've lost a concept of what makes us happy. And I guess it's from my experience as a nutritional health professional, and I see it in clinic all the time, that if something doesn't make you happy, there's just no point. And you've got to really look at how you view success in order to follow any kind of route in your life. So, Grace, what final food for thought would you leave our listeners today with, a kind of take-home nugget of information?
Or I would say probably that I think sometimes you need to be productive in order to engage in self-care, and sometimes self-care is the most productive thing you can do. I think that can be my catchy catchphrase food for thought.
Grace, that was a wonderful take-home message, so eloquently put and straight to the point.
Thank you
so much. And where can all our listeners go to find out a lot more about you and your new book?
So they can go to @GraceBeverly on Instagram, which is me. And I have links in my bio about the book, or you can buy Working Hard, Hardly Working from all good bookshops. But please think about supporting smaller bookstores, especially in this time.
Oh, that was great. Thank you, Grace, for coming on Food for Thought.
No, thank you so much for having me.
If you are enjoying Food for Thought, you'll absolutely love our up and coming episodes. So if you don't already subscribe, then make sure that you click to be the first to hear it every Monday. It would be brilliant as well if you have the time to leave a review, and that would mean that we could reach higher highs in the charts, and that would result in hopefully helping more and more people. For more information about my Retrition Clinic, books, healthy recipes, and so much more, please visit Retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.